This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Choose from over 85,000 titles and get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/Bobby Blackwolf. More information after the midpoint break. The evil K strikes again and has circumvented trademark law to do it. Plus, activist investors again want Microsoft to dump Xbox. I guess they didn't like Titanfall. Tonight is February 16th, 2014, and the Bobby Blackwolf Show featuring your calls and chat comments is up next. So you would say even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game. I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
It's like 60 degrees out now. Like, ice was coming off of the side of my house like 3 days ago, and then it's 60 today. If you don't like the weather, stick around, it'll change. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a non-icy edition of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. You're joining us live here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com. Welcome. Head on over to our chat room, live.VogNetwork.com. I will be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night, and you can check in. If you are logged into the site, which it would behoove you to log into the site and create an account on the site, you can check in live, just like SSJ100 Matt and Fifth Dream. I don't even know why I read these anymore. It's the same names every time because they've figured out, I guess, how to be the first two. They checked in, got some points, but there's also a passphrase somewhere in the episode. If you are listening on the podcast, you can put that in on the site after you've logged in, and you will be able to get the same amount of points and get credit for watching the show and rise up on the site's leaderboard. A little bit later on, I'm going to be opening up our Skype line and our toll-free number for you to call in. Our Skype line is Bobby Blackwolf Show, that is all one word, or toll-free in North America, 1-888-36-GAME-1, or you can contact me on my website, bobbyblackwolf.com. Fifth Dream says it's F5 and click. That's it's easy peasy. That's how he does it. So the first story that I want to talk about tonight is something that we've talked about this company at length in the past, and it's the Evil K is what I'm going to call them now, because they have fully allowed themselves to become the Evil K. We're talking about King.com, the makers of Candy Crush Saga and various other sagas that do not pertain to Vikings, but do pertain to sweets and stuff. We've talked about them at length, but what came out this week was something that their lawyers did that was very underhanded. And I haven't seen if there's like any kind of continuation of this or anything. This has apparently been a long, like a years long battle that finally this guy had finally given up. But here's the reason I'm saying this is that if you have not deleted Candy Crush Saga or any of the other sagas from the Evil K from your Facebook or your phone or anything, go do that. Just go ahead and delete those. They don't need, like, this even got around to my friends that don't follow the game industry, and they deleted Candy Crush Saga, and they were addicts. I had to block some of them, and you know, that's kind of how bad this is. So it's a game called Candy Swipe, which obviously we all would know as a ripoff of Candy Crush Saga. It was kind of interesting. What happened is this guy made this game Candy Swipe after building a time machine, going into the future, playing Candy Crush Saga, and then bringing it back to the past and releasing it. That's the obvious answer here as to why this happened. But he wrote an open letter. His name is Albert Ransom, which is a great last name. I know other people with the name Ransom, and I didn't know why they didn't go by their own name, because it's an awesome name. Albert Ransom, he is the president and founder of Runsome Apps. And he wrote an open letter to King, which is how we all learned of this, because he tried to keep it, you know, in the courts and, you know, out of the public eye. He didn't want to make a big spectacle. But he congratulated King on their win. So he created his game Candy Swipe in memory of his late mother, who passed away at an early age of 62 of leukemia. He says, I released Candy Swipe in 2010, 5 months after she passed, and I made it because she always liked those sorts of games. In fact, if you beat the full version of the Android game, you will still get the message saying this game was made in memory of my mother, Layla. I created this game for warm-hearted people like her and to help support my family, wife, and two boys, 10 and 4. 2 years after I released Candy Swipe, you released Candy Crush Saga on mobile. The app icon, candy pieces, and even the rewarding suite are nearly identical, so much so that I have hundreds of instances of actual confusion from users who think Candy Swipe is Candy Crush Saga or that Candy Swipe is a Candy Crush Saga knockoff. So when you attempted to register your trademark in 2012, I opposed it for likelihood of confusion, which is my legal right, given I filed for register trademark back in 2010, 2 years before Candy Crush Saga existed. Now, after quietly battling this trademark opposition for a year, I have learned that you now want to cancel my Candy Swipe trademark so that I don't have the right to use my own game's name. So here we are. Candy Crush Saga comes out in 2012. They file for a trademark in 2012. The guy who made a similar game in 2010 says, no, you can't, you know, I'm going to oppose your trademark. And now King has the legal authority to cancel his trademark that came before theirs. And what's the thing about the trademark law is why they're able to do this is because it's not about who's first to market. It's not like a patent. It's about whose brand needs protecting the most. Is how this goes. And here's how. They're able to do this because within the last month, they purchased the rights to a game named Candy Crusher, which is nothing like Candy Swipe or even Candy Crush Saga. Candy Crusher was the trademark was filed for in 2004, so it predates Candy Swipe. So what they're doing is saying, hey, we own Candy Crusher, which is from 2004, so that means we have more to lose. We have more to protect because our game predates Candy Swipe. And so they are moving to invalidate his 2010 game because they own a game from 2004 that they are trying to protect. And they have done it. He says, good for you. You win. And then, you know, he adds, I hope you're happy taking the food out of my family's mouth when Candy Swipes clearly existed well before Candy Crush Saga. He continues, he says, I have spent over 3 years working on this game as an independent app developer. I learned how to code on my own after my mother passed, and Candy Swipe was my first and most successful game. It's my livelihood, and now you are attempting to take that away from me. You have taken away the possibility of Candy Swipe blossoming into what it has the potential of becoming. I have been quiet not to exploit the situation, hoping that both sides could agree on a peaceful resolution. However, your move to buy a trademark for the sole purpose of getting away with infringing on the Candy Swipe trademark and goodwill just sickens me. It also contradicts your recent quote in their open letter on intellectual property that they did post on their webpage, which says, quote, we believe in a thriving game development community and believe that good game developers, both small and large, have every right to protect the hard work they do in the games they create, unquote. And he says that he was only trying to protect his hard work. Candy Crusher, it's not a puzzle game. It came out in 2004. It had a trademark. King acquired that. They also acquired the trademark Candy. That's something that a lot of people glossed over this, is that they did not actually get the Candy trademark in the European Union. They actually purchased the Candy trademark from another company. And that was when they started down the path. And then when they went to the U.S., they said, hey, we have this trademark in the European Union. We now want this same trademark in the U.S. And then they're filing for Saga on their own, I believe. I'm pretty sure that's how it works. But they purchased the Candy trademark from somebody else. And then they now they've purchased another game just so they could invalidate this other trademark that trumps theirs. Because now they trump. And that's how this all works. We really need patent and trademark reform in this country. We really do. SJ100 Matt over at live.vognetwork.com says, I downloaded Candy Swipe and gave it a positive review. Fifth Dream says, they may as well just copyright Sugar, too, and cover all the bases, nip it in the bud before it is even candy. And DC Nate says, fight back, buy Candy Swipe. And he actually links to the Google Play Store Because it has, I don't think it's been taken down yet, and I don't think that the trademark's been invalidated yet. But I think that the paperwork is in motion, and I think that basically this guy does not have the money to fight a trademark from 2004 saying he shouldn't have his trademark. He was able to fight the one from 2012, but not the one from 2004. Dungeon Buster says this sounds similar to what companies have done with buying a patent portfolios. Suddenly, the new builder can claim infringement, which is what a lot of patent trolls have been doing, even though they themselves didn't actually produce anything other than litigation. There are a lot of companies that do that. They all operate in East Texas because that's apparently a very good place for all the lawsuits to be, because the judges are very pro-patents down there. And that's basically what they do. They say, well, we have the patent for this technology, and we're just trying to protect the inventor. And we're trying to protect the invention. And, you know, why are you against inventors? But right now, I think what's happened is that Congress did pass a law, at least for patent reform, means that if a patent troll loses, he has to pay all the legal filing and the legal fees of the other of the company that they went up against. And they're fighting that. There's a lot of lobbyists fighting that, saying that's unfair to businesses, it's unfair to patent holders, why should they have to pay for the legal costs of another entity, because when they feel that they're in the right. So it's emboldening a lot of people to go, actually take these patent trolls to court instead of settling, and it's scaring the patent trolls, because now if they lose, they are out a lot more money than they would have gotten. Fifth Dream says, I think I'm going to go to the pharmacy tomorrow and buy me a few boxes of the sweet confection, formerly known as candy. So, it's if you didn't hate King yet, now you can. And this has happened before with other companies. We just never really heard about it as much and concentrated on it as much. But this is the kind of stuff that happens when you get big. And it's kind of sad, because King was a small developer at one time, which is what we learned from the whole Pacavoid situation, is that they were a small-time developer, and then they made it big, hired a legal team, and now they can do all this other stuff because they have all this money from people buying things to help them clear level 90-something in Candy Crush Saga. So this is your fault, world. And it really scares, like, the whole trademark and the patent thing is really the main reason I don't really get into game development or want to do game development, because I'm always afraid I'm going to infringe on something and then, I lose my house. That's kind of the problem, is, if I unknowingly infringe on somebody else's patent, because there are code patents, if I unknowingly infringe on it, they could sue me and take everything I own. That does not make me want to, do this type of stuff. I mean, the big patent that I talked about a couple years ago was from a company called Lodesys. They patented in-app purchases. And instead of going after Apple, they basically went after anybody that used Apple's API to do in-app purchases, which is the only way you're allowed to do in-app purchases on iOS. And they said, no, we have a license with Apple, but we don't have one with you. And their license doesn't handle you, so we're going to go to you, and you need to pay us a percentage of all your revenues from your in-app purchases, because we own in-app purchases. And Apple actually did file started standing up on behalf of their app developers, because Apple forces you to use this system that apparently breaks this patent, and Apple pays for the license from Lodesys. It's a really messy situation, and I hate code patents. Gamebrew says, now let's make the same rules apply to copyright and trademark trolls, and we'd at least be on a good path to fixing IP law. I would love to see us fix intellectual property law, because a lot of the IP laws that are on the books, the internet was not a household term. I don't even think the internet existed. I think this is even before ARPANET and all that stuff, is when all these patents and trademark laws were made, and they have not been updated in that time. So it's we live in a new age now, and we need to, but try asking Congress to do anything right now. Dungeon Buster says, step one, start small. Step two, get big. Step three, hire a legal team. Step four, ... Step five, court awarded profit. That's exactly what it is. So moving on, because that's a little bit depressing. I did want to talk about this. I actually played a game this weekend that a lot of people were playing, this beta. And it's funny, SSJ100 Matt says, everybody seemed to have gotten the beta except me. It actually stopped being a closed beta last night, and it was free for everybody. And I think it's still there. And I'm talking about Titanfall, the Xbox and PC exclusive, much to the chagrin of Sony fanboys. Which it's really funny to watch them, you know, attack EA, because there was the story, there was a Twitter exchange, and Peter Moore is hilarious on Twitter because he plays dumb when trolls attack him, and it's great. Because last in January, PS4 sold really, really well, and that's awesome for Sony, and that's awesome for gaming. PS4 like outsold its nearest next gen competitor by double in January. And somebody posted on Twitter, says, yeah, EA's really upset, you know, or, you know, how does EA feel? Ha ha, get that. And Peter Moore's like, yeah, we're the number one third-party publisher on the number one next-gen console. That's a really bad position to be in. He's like, well, imagine if you had Titanfall on there. And he's like, we're number one already. It's not a bad position to be in. And it was just funny, because he played dumb and stuff. But Titanfall, it's only on PC. It's only on Xbox. And it was kind of funny. Loki sent me a code for Xbox One, because I have an Xbox One, he doesn't. And he sent it to me, and I installed it Thursday night and went through the tutorial, and it was kind of neat. Then I didn't touch it. And then I got I got two beta codes myself from EA. And I was like, okay, huh, I wonder what I'm going to do with these. And then like a couple hours later, they're like, yeah, no more codes. Everybody gets Titanfall. It's out. But I was really excited for it here's why, because I know it's a first-person shooter, but Ben Kuchera, who's somebody who I love reading his work. I don't always agree with him. He used to be at Penny Arcade Report. Now he's at Polygon. You either like him or you hate him, and there are a lot of people that hate him. But he actually wrote an editorial on Polygon about how Titanfall is the perfect game for somebody who sucks at first-person shooters. And I was like, that's me. He's talking about me. I suck at first-person shooters. So I'm like, you know, because I went in through and did the tutorial, and I'm like, this is kind of neat and stuff. And then I didn't actually go into a real match the first time I played it. So I finally went in, and I'm like, okay, so this isn't like other first-person shooters. And so I'm going to try it. And the main points that he makes is that because of the way Titanfall was designed, it's not a straight, it's not a straight player versus player match. It borrows a lot from MOBAs, like League of Legends, where you have grunts that are AI controlled, and that's why it's only like 12 versus 12. There's not that many people in a game. I can't remember how many people are in the game. Like, there was only like 16 people in the game when I was in. But there's a whole other characters, and so you can go and you can help your team by taking on the AI characters, which take less hits and stuff, and you can help with that, and let the actual experienced people actually take on the other players. And you can still help your team that way, which is great on paper. And it said, you know, this is why this is the next gen of first-person shooters. This is finally, you know, this is raising the bar and this is making it more accessible and stuff. And so I was like, great. And I got to tell you, you know, Ben Kuchera's article and his opinion on that, or what he's saying about that article, it is completely and absolutely incorrect, actually. I hated it. And I had the same issues with it that I had with other first-person shooters and why I don't like playing online. Now, to be fair, everybody was muted for some reason. Like, I couldn't hear anybody, so that's not where I'm going with it. But I went in and played the attrition, I think is what it is, which is just the team deathmatch. It's no, like, capture the flag or anything like that. And I was not having fun, and I was not doing well at all. I would spawn, and 5 seconds later, I'd be dead, and then I'd spawn, and I'd be dead. And I still can't aim worth crap, even with that smart pistol, which actually does, like, aiming targets for you, which is great for killing grunts. It's terrible for killing other pilots, which is what they call other players. But it's the opinion of it's great for people who are not good at first-person shooters was obviously written by somebody who's okay at first-person shooters. Because if you are not good at first-person shooters, it's just as bad as all the others trying to play online. Raginator says, I have a difficult time picturing Black Wolf playing shooters of any kind, even if it's a bit different, if only because he's on record that he doesn't like them due to being terrible at them. I have played shooters. I don't play them online. But, I mean, Portal is kind of a shooter. You're shooting portals and stuff. But, I mean, I enjoyed the Borderlands series. And I enjoyed, you know, Fallout is kind of played like a shooter, but not really. So I do like the game, but I never play them online. And Titanfall is an online-only game. It's only multiplayer. The only single player are those tutorials. And that's it. So you have to look at it from the online standpoint, and that's what I was looking at. I did not run into any technical glitches. I didn't play it that much. I only played a couple matches, but I know that a lot of other people have, and it's really upset a lot of people because, you know, why didn't they test this thing before they released it to the public like this? Fifth Dream says, you mean never seeing anyone and just dying in one hit? Usually, like, there's a mini-map, and I'm like, oh, there's somebody up there, and then suddenly I'm getting shot at, and then I'm dead. And it's like a guy with, like, hitting on the top of a building because it shows the kill cam and everything. And it wasn't fun. I did not kill a single other pilot. I apparently did kill a couple grunts, some AI people, but I didn't, and I died a lot. And I never even got to my Titan. Like, when my Titan would spawn, I would never even get to it. But I was even told, you know, you may want to stay out of the Titan if you're new. It's a lot easier to play as a pilot than it is in your Titan. But I liked, like, the mechanics and stuff when the tutorial went in. I like the mechanics of it. I get it. And I get why it would be newbie-friendly. But it's not the savior for people who don't like shooters that people say it is. I still like my single-player games. And, yes, I have actually finished, I think it was Modern Warfare 3. I did finish the single-player campaign in one night on easy. But I finished it. And I mean, it was well worth the $2 I spent on Redbox to get it for the night. So I'm not totally anti-shooter. I'm not good at them, which is why I never play online. And it sounded like Titanfall would be kind of the cure for that. And I'm going to tell you, it's not. And yeah, it is absolutely because I'm not very good at the game. It's absolutely what it is. And so I will not be purchasing Titanfall because why should I pay $60 for something I'm not good at? The rest of you who do love it and thinks it's awesome, the rest of you can go buy it and have fun. And I will fully applaud that. Sky says, I only have fun in first-person shooters with friends. Honestly, the matchmaking in these games is awful, awful. I've never seen a first-person shooter that does decent matchmaking. I was playing, and, you know, there were a couple people that were, like, level 13 or 14, but a lot of the people in the games I were playing were, like, level 2 to 4, which is around where I was. So it kind of did okay. But it's really hard to do good matchmaking if you're not very good at the game. And Burr says, I don't know if there's a setting you have to hit. I put on a headset and nobody talked. Well, I played on the Xbox One, and nobody talked in mine either. But what I realized is that the Xbox One, it automatically put me into a party. So I wound up starting a party. Titanfall made me start a party. And, like, even after I quit Titanfall, I was still in this party, and other people could have joined my party if they wanted to. And this is even after the update that finally came out on Xbox One that added a battery indicator for your controller and everything. So that may be part of it, is that I was in party chat with no party, and that's why I wasn't hearing anybody else. And maybe everybody else is in the same thing. So that might have been what it was. I don't know if Burr's playing on PC or Xbox One, but that's kind of what I noticed on the Xbox One. DJ Morpheus says, you get better by playing just like anything in life. But it's no fun trying to get better when you die in 10 seconds because, you know, there's the training mode only does so much. Somebody else who probably didn't like Titanfall are some investors. So I want to get into this story a little bit because this is kind of funny. This comes up every couple months. And this was actually a story from last week, and I didn't see it until this week. But it's from the Washington Post, and it says that it's the morning after Satya Nadella's first day at Microsoft CEO. He's the new CEO. So he now has some tough choices. Two influential Microsoft shareholders, we've talked about them on the show before, have been pushing the Redmond software giant to abandon what they view as non-essential product lines so that Microsoft can focus on its core strength, selling enterprise software to businesses. Nadella, the new CEO, spent 7 months running Microsoft's $20 billion server and tools division, so he's ideally suited to manage the transition. But doing so would mean repudiating much of the legacy of his predecessors, Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer, who have long believed that Microsoft needs to win over consumers, not just corporate IT managers. So Windows has the Windows division has been facing shrinking profits. Last year, the unit pulled in a net $9.5 billion, or down from $11.6 billion in 2012 and $12.3 billion in 2011, thanks Mac OS. Company filings suggest that the drop is largely attributed to declining demand for Windows among consumers, even as sales of Windows to businesses remain strong. That's kind of the theme here, is that it's what you use at work, not at home. The same division also reported a $900 million loss on old unsold Surface tablets. The online services division, which oversees search engine Bing, reported a loss of $1.3 billion in 2013, less than the previous year, but still in the red. Some investors also suggested that Microsoft spin off the money-losing consumer products and focus solely on the enterprise, even Xbox. Here's basically what they're saying is that the consumer-facing portion of Microsoft, which is Xbox, Bing, and Surface, they need to get rid of. And they this is actually an investor. It's an activist investor. It's Mason Morfitt is his name. Morfitt is a 37-year-old activist investor whose employer, the private hedge fund ValueAct, acquired a 0.8% stake in Microsoft in August. That was enough to put him on the board. So he was reportedly one of those who urged Ballmer to step down. Microsoft denied that ValueAct played any role in the decision, but the way the events played out nonetheless reflected on ValueAct's power as a shareholder voice. More important, ValueAct has been a critic of Microsoft's strategy and wants the company to consider shedding of its investments in consumer technology. They want the company also to unbundle its offerings, such as Microsoft Office, so they can be used on other platforms besides Windows. So what you know, and it's kind of interesting, the three things that they're talking about here, Xbox, Bing, and Surface, they all have one thing in common with Microsoft, and it's that all three of those divisions are in a distant second to their competitors. Xbox is in a distant second with Sony right now. Bing, distant second to Google. And Surface is in a distant second to probably to Apple, maybe even a third. It's probably far, you know, if you look at like the Samsung Galaxy tablets and stuff. So we've actually talked about this in chat a little bit, and they're like, you know, so who would buy Xbox? Because they don't want to. I don't think they want to like kill Xbox. They just want to sell it to somebody else. And really, I can see Samsung buying the Xbox. That's like my real answer. If somebody asked me who do you think would buy Xbox, well. I think Samsung, and that would also give consoles a foothold in Korea, which is a place that is so PC-centric, it's not even funny. And, you know, having the Xbox be the console from South Korea would help a lot in the console space, but, you know, I can and give Samsung a foothold in the console space here in the U.S. and in Japan and stuff like that. So Xbox isn't going away, but there are people that want Microsoft to kill it, but I don't know if they actually will. And I actually think that Nadella, in an interview, he actually did say, I'm not selling the Xbox division. Like, he's already kind of gone on record on that. But things could always change. Dungeon Buster says, one of the reasons Windows sales are down is because their corporate customers aren't rushing in to buy Windows 8 licenses. And one thing I do want to say is, you know, we can bash, you know, Microsoft all we want on the consumer side and stuff. But in terms of, you know, like enterprise and business-to-business tools that they make, they're really, really good. And, you know, like I've used like OpenOffice and stuff, and I still prefer Microsoft Office, which is your Word and PowerPoint and Excel and things like that. And really, Microsoft Visual Studio, I think, is still one of the best integrated development environments, IDEs, out there. And a lot of people agree, even if they hate Microsoft, they usually all agree, yeah, but Visual Studio is not that bad. I prefer it a lot to Xcode over Xcode, which is Apple's IDE. And I've used a couple others. Like Eclipse is, I think, the preferred one for Android development stuff. And, I mean, if I'm going to use an IDE, I'd rather it be Visual Studio. I don't actually code usually using Visual Studio or any kind of visual tools like that. But Visual Studio is the best one. And, you know, a lot of their other stuff that are server-grade and business-grade stuff is really, really good. And so that's – I can see, you know, that stuff makes money. And so obviously the investors, their goal is to make money and not to lose it. And if that means cutting off the stuff that doesn't work so you can concentrate on the stuff that does, then that's – I can see exactly what they're talking about and why they would want to do that. Raginator says, I like Bing if only because of all the freebies I get that I get by using it. And we wonder why Bing's losing money. It's because they're giving away free stuff. Tigerclaw says, Bing has a feature that gives you points for searching, and you can use those points to buy things like an Xbox Live subscription or any other prizes. Exactly why Bing is losing money. So we're going to take a quick music break. And this one actually is going to be on the podcast because this is a little personal thing for me. I'm going to be a little bit narcissistic here, which I don't do this often, so please grant me this one. But a blog post came out today by somebody that I haven't spoken to, and he probably doesn't even remember me, in probably 17, 18 years. And it was by his name is Jeffrey Lim. And Jeffrey Lim created a piece of software that was very influential in my life and set me down on a path that I ultimately did not go down. Like, I took an exit off that highway and gone on a different highway. He created a piece of software called Impulse Tracker. Now, Impulse Tracker was, back in the 90s, it was a music composing software. He wrote it in MS-DOS. And it created his version of mod files, which were they started on the Amiga, and these were very small, digitized music files. And basically, the way it works technically is that you have digital samples, and then you have pattern data that tells, you know, what pitch to play that sample and how long to play it and stuff like that. And so you could have these really complex songs in a very small file, which is actually seeing a little bit of a resurgence nowadays with mobile, where you don't want to have so much memory. So a lot of people are going back to mods. But even like this type of software was used in DS games even recently. But also early on, Unreal, the first Unreal, way back when, used mod files and these type of files and Impulse Tracker files, which is what he did. And he actually introduced a lot of things into tracking tracking music that kind of changed the game and allowed more flexibility for what composers could do with the music. It turns out that so 20 years ago is when the first line of Impulse Tracker he started working on. It was written. It was a very significant project for him, and he intends to fully release the full source code of all of Impulse Tracker, the core program, all sound drivers, including for Wave and MIDI, and even the rarely used network code later this year. In total, there's over 230,000 lines of assembler code. And it was all written in an era with 8.3 file names. Source control meant copying all the files to a separate disk and labeling it. And there was no syntax highlighting in source code editors, let alone autocomplete or documentation links. It really was a different time and stuff. And I spent the majority of my time being a music developer or music composer in Impulse Tracker, which was basically, it looked a lot like Scream Tracker, which was by Future Crew, but they weren't updating it anymore. So it controlled a lot like Impulse Tracker with the same keyboard shortcuts and everything. And, I actually was in a couple games where, I contributed music. One of the games that I contributed a full 8-song or 9-song soundtrack to, it was actually done by two guys who then actually got careers in the game industry. One worked at 2K. One worked at 2K Marin. He worked on Bioshock 2. And he actually went on, he became an indie developer and released Eldritch. So if you've played Eldritch, which is like the big indie, like a lot of people were really big into it, the voxel shaded procedural Lovecraft game, that was him. And then his brother worked on Borderlands and Borderlands 2. And he recently went out, became an indie developer, and he's working on a couple indie games as well. So they were the talented ones, and they're still in the industry and actually doing really well for themselves. But after that, I decided I couldn't keep up, because we were getting the industry was getting away from tracker files and they were going more to Redbook Audio, and I didn't have the patience for that, and I didn't consider myself very good, and I still don't, which is why I don't. I wrote the music, the theme music to this show, in Impulse Tracker on an old DOS box. But what I decided to put in here is this is actually the last quote unquote single I ever released, and it was made in Impulse Tracker probably in 1999 or 2000. And the file size for this, I think, just so you know how big the file was, about 200K is how big the file was that you could, and then you would load it in your player and then this would play. So this was the last single I ever wrote. It may not be your cup of tea or anything. It's not It's kind of weird to describe it, so I'm not going to. But it's called Resurrection because I thought it was going to resurrect my music composing, and it really was the end of it. So this is a song I wrote in 1999 called Resurrection. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com.
When I'm not putting a hit on the drongos, I'm listening to the Bobby Blackwolf Show. He's a right cobber, mate.
This song that's playing right now is from Team Fortress 2. That's not me. So that was the sniper from Team Fortress 2 that did that bumper. If you want to leave a bumper, you don't have to be a sniper from Team Fortress 2. You can be a sniper in Titanfall because they're apparently everywhere. You can leave me a bumper on the toll-free number or send me an MP3 with just your voice. Bumpers at BobbyBlackwolf.com. Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. You can get that 30-day free trial, get a free audiobook, and that's yours to cancel even if you cancel before the trial is over. There's over a million audiobooks there, so why not make any of those your free audiobook? All you got to do is go to audibletrial.com/BobbyBlackwolf. And I also want to put in a plug here because I actually have it written under here that I should plug this each time. Stitcher. This show is on Stitcher, and if you do like the show, not if you hate the show. If you hate the show, don't do this. If you like the show, go to Stitcher, and you use Stitcher. Leave a 5-star review, because that actually does help the show get higher in the Stitcher list and get more recognition. So if you like the show, that would help. If you hate the show, we're not on Stitcher. Don't even bother. So the phones are now open. Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-888-36-GAME-1, toll-free. In North America, you can call in, talk about candies or Titans or anything going on in the gaming industry. And a lot of people, I thank you for the positive comments. The people who hated it stayed silent, which was nice. I appreciate that. You know, the kind comments. Everybody says it had a Final Fantasy vibe. I really was into the Nobuo Uematsu soundtracks because that was around the time of 6 and 7 and 8, around that time. But a lot of my tracks were, you know, the piano and drums and violins and stuff because those were the samples that I had that sounded the best. And they were good samples, which is why the file was 200K. That's a big file. Usually my songs were somewhere between 50 and 100K. And in fact, the game that I made, that the guy who made Eldritch, the game he made early on, one of the complaints in reviews of the game, because most of them all agree the music's horrible in the game, but he said the complaint was, it sounds like it came straight out of Final Fantasy VI. I'm like, that's exactly what I was going for. Thank you. But it was a first-person shooter. It wasn't a Japanese RPG, so it didn't really fit. Fifth Dream says, I got into mod files in my early NET days. They were so much better sounding than MIDIs. I was amazed. I got into them, too, and they were... It was kind of funny getting into doing, you know, the tracking stuff, because it's very mathematic. And coming as somebody who's both a musician and a programmer, it made more sense to me. Like, I can't use any of these programs. Like, I've tried to use Finale and stuff, and I can't use those to create music. But I can go in to Impulse Tracker, the 2.17, I think was the last one from 1998. I can go in there, and I can fly around, and I can still do just about anything. Because it's very mathematical, it's very math. I mean, it uses hex numbers and everything, so it's more math oriented than, you know, trying to write out on sheet music, which is why I liked it. But it's just I graduated college, got a real job, and decided I wasn't cut out to be a music composer, and now I do a podcast. I will say it's funny regarding the Titanfall stuff is that you know, there are a couple people on Twitter that are just have so been burned by EA. That they hate everything about EA, and they were, you know, totally, you know, saying, you know, they were saying stuff I can't repeat. And one guy, it was funny, he was on Twitter ranting about this and saying things that I don't want to repeat on this show about them. Like, and then he had Bible verses around them, so he's like quoting the Bible, and then in the middle, you know, just saying the nastiest stuff about EA and where they can go and what they can do. And I'm like, that doesn't what. I'm confused. Fifth Dream says, Lightning Returns, like 25 hours of it this week so far. I've played like, the 10-minute demo of Lightning Returns. Unfortunately, because of the ice storm that kept me inside all week, it started Tuesday, and that was when Lightning Returns came out, so I didn't pick it up. I resubbed to Final Fantasy XIV instead. So that's my gaming, is Final Fantasy XIV. I'm actually near endgame, which is why I've like stopped playing that character. And it's kind of funny because everybody in the free company that I'm in the same one like that Rob's in with Horde House on Final Fantasy XIV, and I'm at like the last two dungeons because you have to do the multiplayer stuff to progress in the story, and I'm at the last two dungeons of the story, which then you can go into endgame stuff, and I'm putting it off, and there are people in my free company that are like, no, we're not going to let you put it off any longer. You need to do them soon. We do actually finally have a call here. So, Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
There's not enough Brits on this show, Bobby.
Oh, not enough. Well, I've been there once.
Really? Where did you? This is Obi-Wan Jabroni, yeah. By the way.
Yeah, Obi-Wan Jabroni. So, no, I've been in London once.
Oh, really?
A long time ago.
Did you like it?
I liked it, but you got to realize, like, I didn't really get to experience London. Because okay. my senior year of high school, I marched in the Lord Mayor's New Year's Day parade.
Oh, so you didn't get to see the London Eye probably wasn't around.
No. Right. And you know, we were chaperoned and heavily watched.
And... Oh, was it the guards with the big with the
No,
big
it was like our principal was with us and you know, not letting the high school students get away with anything.
Right.
But I may be going back to London this year.
Oh, cool! I don't live in London. Mm-hmm. I'm about 3 hours away.
Okay.
I live in a town called Bolton, but mm-hmm. Yeah, we should hook up and have the steak dinner.
Yeah. I may be in London because of the NFL.
The what?
Our football league. There's a game in London that I may be performing at.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you mean handball?
Yeah, American handball.
American football.
Yes.
American soccer.
Not your football.
Soccer.
Yes.
Football.
Yeah, our football.
Okay. I
the football you don't watch.
Yeah, which I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a lost language here.
Yes.
Apparently. gaming.
Yes.
This is a gaming show.
This is.
Apparently. Yeah. Titanfall beta. Uh-huh. Or beta. Or wherever you live. I know you guys. I know the Americans love beta.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I played it. I didn't go online. Like you, Bobby, I am terrible at FPS games. I don't play them.
Right.
I prefer third person.
Mm-hmm.
Went on the training. I did the training. And, you know, it was okay. And then I was like, do I really want to go online? Not really, because
mm-hmm.
I'm probably, like you, I'm probably going to get killed in the first, you know, but
yes.
Not even, like, 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, no, F it, I'm not going to go online. Can I say F it?
Yes.
On this? Okay. So, yeah, I didn't go online with it, but it seems cool for people like me and you who are not very good at these games. The tutorial was very, it literally held your hand, didn't it?
Yes.
It was pretty, I mean, I thought that was pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I played Call of Duty,
yeah.
Modern Warfare 2, which was a long time ago.
Right.
But, I'm not going to buy this game. I'm not going to pay, £40 or whatever
right.
it is over here, which is probably about $100 US.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna buy it.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason I got it was just like, to me, it was just like, okay, it's a free thing. It's because I did apply for the beta, just thought, yeah, maybe I'll get in. I didn't care if I didn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it was just like, well, it's a way to try a demo, isn't it?
Yeah,
for free.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I was, because when I first went in, I did the tutorial. I'm like, I really don't want to play online. And then like all these opinion articles came out about how this was great for people who sucked at first person shooters. So I'm like, fine. I sucked it up and went in, and it was just like all the other experiences that I had had in first-person shooters, and nothing like what people were saying it was.
I may try it on. How long have we got till this closes?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm assuming that we're close to the end, though. I think it was just for this weekend.
Also, I want to say, on the Xbox One, when I booted it up this morning, it didn't tell me that I had a system update.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go in settings.
Oh, wow.
I went in settings and it said, okay, time to update. I was like, okay, you're supposed to tell me when I boot this thing up.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that was weird. I'm glad they've got the battery indicator, though,
yeah.
Finally. That's cool.
Yeah, because like, I even had that, like, my controller kept shutting off. And I'm like, why is it doing that? Oh, let me try replacing the batteries.
Yeah,
and it turned out, yeah, that's what it was.
Are you like me, like... You know when you get all these mini or micro USB
mm-hmm.
cables, I'm not going to use theirs. I just want to use my own. I just want one. I don't want
yeah.
all these cables, and it's just confusion.
Yeah.
And the cable I use, it's with, I got a wireless 360, official Microsoft 360 headset, and I just use that cable. Because the problem is it's got no light on it. It's not got no indicator light on it to
yeah.
tell you. So I'm like, well, I don't want to use theirs,
mm-hmm.
the one I got with the play and charge kit. I'm just going to use this thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, the update's cool. We've got storage management.
Yeah, and I saw that. Well, and actually, here's the thing, is that the update actually removed something that I used. And nobody's talking about this, because what I would do is I liked going into the Upload app. Not Upload Studio, I'm talking the Upload app.
Yep.
And I would look, go over, and it would say, here's all the clips your friends have uploaded. And I'd go in and see, you know, go through that. They took that away.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You can no longer watch clips of your friends. You can actually, you can still get to them. Like, if you know that a friend of yours has uploaded clips, you can, like, find them in the Friends app, go to theirs, and then see all their clips. Which then launches the Upload app, but it's no longer actually on the menu. It's like feature creators, latest uploads, and games, and that's
yeah.
it. And they took away the ability for me to see like what my friends were doing, and I think that
yeah.
kind of sucks. I don't like removing features like that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's yeah, because I use that app all the time. The
mm-hmm.
the smart glass, whatever
yeah.
it's called. Thanks for reading my comment, by the way. on the comment I posted on the
Oh, it'll be read.
Oh, will it?
It just hasn't been read yet.
Oh, spoilers! Spoilers alert! Yeah. Real quick before I go, because I don't know if anyone else wants to call in. I just want to give a few thoughts on this whole MGS Ground Zeroes thing. Yeah, there's been a whole lot of arguments online, and if you read the Facebook page, it is pretty pathetic. I mean, it's like to the point where Konami like needs to step in and start monitoring this stuff, because people are literally just arguing.
So what's the big deal about this? Just for people who don't know.
Yeah, basically, Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes, it's a prequel to The Phantom Pain, which is coming out whenever. And the reports have come out and said it's only a 2-hour thing. So basically, it's like people are paying for a demo, right? Yeah. And, you know, and there was a whole lot of controversy about it. And then now it's come out and said, okay, you know, it is 2 hours of gameplay, but there's a lot of side content stuff that you can do. And, you know, and it's also come out that it looks better on the PS4 as well. So the Xbox One. Yeah. But also, I'm thinking, though, you know, it's not like Konami, you know, you don't have to buy this.
Right.
You know, state your opinion, but at the end of the day, you don't have to buy it. Just vote with your wallet. It'll be on PlayStation Plus at some point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one of the comments on Vogue said, you know, they're going to promote it on PS Plus before the main game comes out. So, right. You know, I just... People just argue, and it's pretty terrible.
That's what they do on the internet, unfortunately.
Apparently, this thing called the internet, people do this stuff. So, yeah, pretty bad. I don't know what you think about all the controversy, but...
I haven't really paid it. I'm not a big Metal Gear Solid person, so yeah. I haven't really paid that much attention to it. People are just going to complain, and their point that they may be making is, why are you wasting time on this thing that I don't like when you should be working on this thing that I do like? And that's kind of their justification.
What does Bobby Blackwolf like?
Katamari Damacy and Rock Band and combine the both of those together.
Yeah, whatever happened to Rock Band? I thought DJ Hero was kind of cool, too.
I didn't like DJ Hero. But all the music games, they're in the past now. I'm, you know... Activision killed that market. Thanks, yeah, Activision.
Good old Activision. Just real quick before I get out of here. I picked up a stinker of a game by Activision, actually. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
It's really bad. It is. Avoid that game, people.
Don't worry. I will avoid that game, just because you said so. All right. Thanks for your call, man. I appreciate it.
No problem. Take care, Bobby.
So that's it. I went a little long, but that's okay. So coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com, three people out in Sacramento, California who talk about games for much, much longer than I do, and they have their own opinions on things, so we like to check in with them. Sacramento, are you guys there?
We are here, Bobby. How are you?
I am doing good. So have you Titanfalled?
Just a little bit. I only had the time to play the tutorial section, so I didn't bother to get in there and play with other people yet. I like some of the concepts. Like, I like the whole like running on the walls things. I think it might be a fun game to play with friends, but sort of like the comment I said earlier is that, you know, I don't expect the matchmaking to be very good, especially in the beta when everybody's starting from ground zero, you know, everybody's starting from level one. You know, you have all the really good players that, you know, can pick these up right away and so forth are there too. Yeah. You know, and I don't want to, like, sound like a crier, like, oh, I'm bad at these games and I can't handle the good people. It's not really that, but, you know, A lot of times it's the attitude of said people, and B, I do kind of want to be matched against people around my own skill. It's not a lot of fun to just sit there and get trounced the entire time.
Yeah.
I had the best time with Halo 2 when I used to play with my college buddies, but we were all around the same skill level.
Yeah. Yeah. So I tried it a couple times. Like, I like the tutorial. I like, you know, it's got MOBA elements in it, which is kind of neat with the grunts and everything. Mm-hmm. And so I'm happy that it's out there. but it's not the savior for people who suck that people think it is.
Right, exactly. You know, I will say this, though, as far as first-person shooters go, and I'm sure you're going to love this answer, and even though it's a little more third-person over the shoulder, I loved the experience that Mass Effect 3 multiplayer brought to the table because it was co-op, and it was all co-op, strictly co-op.
And it was over the shoulder.
Yeah, and it was a very different, like, game because of that, and it kind of forced a different attitude from people.
I have that installed and still never opened it. It's sitting on my computer because it was my SimCity game.
Hurry before EA takes the servers down, because it's been a year, so it's probably on notice.
They got to make room for Titanfall.
As soon as they announce whatever's next for Mass Effect, which hopefully is this E3, fingers crossed.
So, and you heard that we had that call from Obi-Wan Jabroni.
I did.
He said, thanks for reading my comment. Well, I was kind of saving the comment, because I wanted to talk to you about this. His comment on the last episode, which I do try to read the comments, he said, you know what rhymes with Flappy Bird? Crappy Turd. And it's been interesting this week watching, like, all these clones come up. You know, like, Fall Out Boy, the band, did a clone. Sesame Street did one.
Darkstalker just showed me Flappy Caden from Mass Effect.
Wow.
I want to mention that game twice. Flappy Caden, which is good. And Sesame Street did that amazing one.
The Flappy Bird. I think I know what your favorite is.
My favorite is the one that Terry Cavanaugh did of VVVV fame. And I can't believe I forgot the name is slipping my mind right now.
Maverick Bird.
Thank you, Maverick Bird.
Which is down right now. Like, his site's been down all day. And it's funny, like, you look on his Twitter, he's like, everything's down, but it's a nice day. I don't care. I'm going to go take a walk.
Good for him. You know what? You earned that walk. You go walk.
But that was a fun game. But it's like everybody's making all these clones.
Really? Everybody. Everybody.
And I want to get in on this.
You think? You think we should get in on this, Bobby?
I think we should get in on this.
All right, what the heck? Let's get in on it.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, if you go to flappy.vognetwork.com right now, if you're on a computer, not going to work on tablets or phones, you can play Flappy Vog, which is basically, it's a game about controlling one of the hosts on Vog as they you'd control their head flapping through. We don't know why they're flapping through all these pillars in space, but they are.
I tried to write a backstory that they were all trying to travel to the satellite of Vog because there's a very space kind of background there. But it didn't work.
Well, because that would imply that there would be an ending.
Yes.
That would imply that there actually was a satellite of Vog at the end.
That would imply there was actually a satellite of Vog to travel to, you see.
That's right. So you can actually play this game. We have four characters in. And since we're all podcasters, we don't shut up. So we're chattering at you the entire time. And I actually had this idea Wednesday night, and we're releasing it now. So it took me like 5 days to make. Yeah?
Snowstorms do crazy things to people, huh? Some people go all Jack Nicholson in The Shining. You write Flappy Vog.
I write Flappy Vog. So the four characters right now are me, you, Rob. We have Travis from Under Sedation Live and Brad from Pod Culture. They were the ones that were able to get to it. We've extended it to a lot of the other hosts. Things happened where they couldn't do it this weekend, but we're going to add more people because I know, like, Ranma's at Katsucon and stuff, so Anime Jam Session can't be in there.
I was busy in the snow.
You were up in the mountains, right?
I went outside Truckee to where the snow went up to my boobs when I fell through it.
Yeah.
And I'm 5'2", so yeah, that was, like, most of me. Mm-hmm. And I left feeling like I had spent 5 hours in the gym. That's how sore I was. But it was awesome. And so I already thought of things to say, so you will be getting my stuff.
So we can already plan our first DLC expansion pack.
Yes.
For Flappy Vog.
And we're going to make it, you have to pay for it. I don't know. We're not.
Oh, when have we ever made people pay for things?
Buy me a taco for it.
There we go.
Tacos.
You can donate tacos to the Vog Fund.
And just so people know, like it does require the Unity web player, which is a plugin you may have to download. It's the latest version of Unity that it uses. It does actually fully integrate with the site. So if you are logged in to vognetwork.com, you can actually get on the leaderboard. There's even loot that drops on the site, so it even gets you on the main leaderboard as well and stuff. So, but here's the thing. Also, is that I'm a programmer by trade, but I've played a little bit in the Unity game engine. I know Loki has a little bit too. I've played a little bit in the Unity game engine in the past, but never really sat down in it and did something from start to finish. And I can see why a lot of indie game developers love Unity. Because really, I had the flappy portion, the game portion, done in like 4 hours with like no Unity experience at all. And because you played it like Wednesday night, and it was really difficult.
Yeah, I kind of got to see the early version of it, where it really remind me of an Atari 2600 game.
Yeah, because it was a dot.
It was a dot.
It was a little cube bouncing around, and then I finally put in the heads and stuff. But yeah, we have voice files. I actually spent more time working on like the menus and the integration with the site than I did with the game. But there's also there's a whole like audio engine and stuff. So there's about, I think, 15 phrases that are said at different times from mm-hmm. each host and stuff. So you can go through and try to get on. And each character has their own leaderboard. So you have to play all four characters to get on the top of all the leaderboards.
Look at that, ACT-EFT already. 23 so far.
Oh, wow. So I wiped the leaderboard, so you don't see my high score. I think my high score finally, like on the version that's up now, I think I got up to like 46.
Yeah, I got up to 40-something, and I actually said, Bobby, I think it's too easy. And then he's like, oh, you didn't play far enough. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. he told me secrets, and I was like, oh, okay.
So, but yeah, flappy.vognetwork.com. It's called Flappy Vog. And yes, you can annoy your Twitter timeline with it. But just so you know, I do realize that if you hit the button, nothing's going to really happen. Your browser will block the pop-up if you have that turned on, so you'll have to allow the pop-up. No way around that, just because of the way it's made. But yes, you can annoy Twitter with your scores.
And just again, we're not charging money for this, or it's just for fun. And Bobby was like really bored this week in the snow, yes, y'all.
Pretty much. Really.
But I love it. If this is what boredom leads to, you know what? I hope it snows again next week.
No. I want to get out. I need to be let out. So what are you guys going to be talking about tonight on the show?
Oh, my gosh. Well, one of the big, big things that I noticed you didn't get to tonight, just, for time, because we had to talk about Flappy Vog, but Nintendo had a bit of things to say this week. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Internet's got a little bit of feedback on Nintendo's latest Direct.
You don't say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the Internet's always got a little bit of feedback for Nintendo Direct, so we're going to be talking about that as well. Darksaka's got a very interesting story about the possibility of virtual goods being regulated, at least in one country anyway. And we look forward to the Arcade Expo. JAEPO is going to be, or JAPO? I don't know how you say
it's YAPO.
YAPO. No, but we're going to be looking forward to that as well on tonight's show.
All right. So Orange Lounge Radio is up next. You listen to them and then go play Flappy Vog, because you really want to hear the audio of the game, because that's where it shines.
Yes.
All right. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you, as always, Bobby. Good job this week.
To register participation for this week's episode of the Bobby Blackwolf Show on VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase BLUE. Thank you. So that's it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com. You can catch us live, interact with the show directly, and tell me how much you hate my Flappy Bird clone that we just released. You can leave me a voicemail on any topic or leave a bumper for use on the show on the toll-free number 1-888-36-GAME, or you can email me an MP3 to bumpers@BobbyBlackwolf.com. I'm on Facebook at facebook.com/BobbyBlackwolf or on Twitter at Bobby Blackwolf, or you can contact me on my website. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet. And if you like it, go leave a 5-star review on Stitcher. That would really help the show. That actually, unlike iTunes reviews, that actually does affect our ranking, those reviews. So that would help a whole lot if you like the show. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of the chatters. So thank you very much, Dark Soccer, Dark Tetsuya, Hecht, Misty, Sky, VXJSNXV, Doomplague, Fifth Dream, Havoc978, Shadow Next Gen, ActDeft, Alan Alchemy, Awesome Unicorn, Bob Coffee, Brad from Pod Culture, who is one of the playable characters in Flappy Vog, Burr, Degenerate Johnny, DJ Morpheus, another playable character, Dr. Blue Guy, Dungeon Buster, Eric RPG, Fractal, Game Guru, GK128, Gripper01, Hitstun, Ikuma JP, Kaijudo, Kazan, Mako, Melted General, Monster B, MXC, MXT, Nemesis 47, Orange Wright, Queen Simia, Raginator, SSJ100 Matt, Tall, Tiger Claw, Toagak, Wyland, and Zappy. So that's it for me. I will be back next week. Go forth and flap, I guess. And flap to the hosts. That sounded bad. See you guys next week. Bye.
a winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.